It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
The future of NAFTA and the future of a key mortgage tax break. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. A fourth round of NAFTA talks begin today in Arlington, Virginia. President Trump repeated threats to pull out of the deal in an interview with Forbes magazine published yesterday, just as Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was on his way to D.C. to meet with him on the subject. Meanwhile, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce warned Trump against pushing too far and risk scuttling the 23-year-old agreement with Mexico and Canada. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson reports.
Topics on the agenda for this round of negotiations are especially contentious.
Each round has been tough and difficult. This is stacked up to be the most important one so far.
Andy Scheuer is a partner with the law firm Sidley Austin.
The view within Washington is that the NAFTA could really be lost.
He says one of the toughest issues this round will be rehashing what share of components in manufactured goods, like cars, must come from NAFTA countries. The U.S. is staking out really aggressive positions on a range of issues, which will make it tough to get a deal, says Gustavo Flores Macias, a government professor at Cornell University.
On the other hand, if the Trump administration decides to walk away from NAFTA, even if that hurts the U.S. economically, politically, that would be probably a win for President Trump.
After all, he campaigned on the idea of withdrawing from NAFTA, and he's already withdrawn from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade agreement negotiated under President Obama. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Checking markets, the FTSE in London is down just 3 points. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are little changed. The Dow future is minus 2 points. And we're about to find out just how awesome it is to be a big bank these days. Some of the titans of Wall Street start reporting third quarter results tomorrow, and many analysts are expecting profits of more than $21 billion. That's record-setting territory. Marketplace's Ryan Kailoff looks at why.
When I asked Jim Sinegal to tell me about bank earnings, I begged him, please, please don't be boring.
That's the first line in my notes, actually, is that most of the time banking is a boring industry.
But this quarter's a little different. Sinegal is a bank analyst with Morningstar, by the way. He says a small handful of major banks like J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, together hold about 40% of all the money in the country. So earnings like this...
It's been more than a decade since banks made this much money in a quarter.
Make Wall Street pay attention. Quincy Crosby at Prudential explains where these profits come from. Banks cutting costs, the Fed finally raising interest rates, low unemployment, and overall growth in the economy. Plus...
There's a growing sense that the White House and that the Republican Party will be able to deliver on tax reform.
That has bank analysts seeing dollar signs, which, of course, are never boring. In New York, I'm Ryan Kailath for Marketplace.
Together, let's learn something important about America's system of taxation. There's stuff that stays in place for decades, and Republicans are supposedly working on those now, but there are also shorter-term tax rules that have to be renewed or they vanish. Bills to keep those breaks in place are called tax extenders. They can include breaks for putting in solar, little write-offs for teachers who have to buy supplies for their classes with their own money. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer looks at one tax extender, the Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act, that is fighting for survival.
It was 2007. The air was starting to leak out of the housing bubble. Home prices were beginning their free fall. Steve Rosenthal of the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center says,
many homeowners struggled to repay their mortgages and were renegotiating the mortgages with banks.
As part of those renegotiations, the banks sometimes forgave part of the debt for homeowners who had missed mortgage payments or were underwater and sold their houses for less than what they owed on their mortgage. But the IRS saw that forgiven debt as income. homeowners had to pay taxes on it, even though they no longer had a home.
And it seems as if the IRS is hitting people when they're down.
So to take the pressure off people who were already struggling through the recession, Congress passed the Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act in 2007. It was supposed to expire after 2 years, but the recession dragged on and lawmakers kept renewing it, helping millions of homeowners. Rosenthal estimates the act would help a few million more if it were renewed. People like 49-year-old Fekta Betru. She and her husband scraped by for years to make their mortgage payments on time.
From hand to mouth, he work, we pay mortgage.
Betru, an Ethiopian immigrant, says her husband was diagnosed with bone cancer 2 years ago and couldn't work. He was a truck driver. They fell behind on their mortgage payments. To avoid foreclosure, they deeded the house back to the bank. The bank forgave around $150,000 of their debt. If the Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act isn't extended, they'll owe around $20,000 in taxes.
I don't think of it as right, if you give forgiveness and then on the other hand you say you have to pay.
Consumer groups are lobbying to keep the act alive, but it's tough going. For starters, they have to get lawmakers' attention.
I think a lot of people are saying, we know, it's on the list.
Marceline White heads the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition. She says getting an extension is usually pretty routine, but this year, everybody's preoccupied.
There are lots of issues just in the past month that have come up, again, between the hurricanes and immigrant rights.
And White says a lot of people think the housing crisis is over. But White says it's far from over in many parts of the country, like in Germantown, Maryland, where close to 10% of homeowners are still underwater. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And Japan's Nikkei stock index hasn't been this high for two decades. December 5th, 1996 was the last time the Nikkei was in this territory. It closed today at 20,881, a rise of 0.3%. This tells you a lot about lost decades for growth in an economy that was, in the 1980s, the fiercest of tigers. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, Daniel Shin. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.